The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 6th of November, 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. You're very welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show, and it's great to be back. And a big thanks to Donald Kavanagh, who, as always, steered the ship with great skill. And it's good to be back, though, as I say. And the lines are open, 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number. Give us a call on 07491 25,000. And if you want to email the programme, comments@highlandradio.com. We've lots coming up, as you can imagine. But if there's something that you want to talk about, something you came across at the weekend, maybe an act of kindness, anything you want to talk about or spread about the Northwest and beyond, all those contact details are good for that too. Right, let's look at the front of the newspaper. Start with the Derry People, Donegal News. A six-week review of Letterkenny University Hospital's emergency department got underway on Friday following concerns for patient safety. This comes after 78 GPs, subsequently backed by 11 consultants, sent written correspondence to the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, imploring him to take urgent action at the hospital's emergency department amid service collapse fears. And, of course, whilst much of that letter was focused on the emergency department, particularly the consultants, in adding a little bit more to the text, said that this is the service collapse risk is because of the amount of people that are leaving the hospital. And I'm sure many of you out there today who were under the guise of one consultant or another who no longer is at the hospital are wondering about your future treatment options. Sligo University Hospital perhaps is going to be where you are going to have to go for endocrinology services, for an example. A lot of people now left in the lurch. I'm not sure what this review of the ED will do in relation to that. It's much wider than that, but look, it is a start. And I asked during the week, last week, what people's work experiences were, because people were having mixed experiences there. And some saying that the wait had become much shorter, or they were being moved around the hospital whilst waiting a bed off the chairs and all that. So I asked the people on social media if that was the case, and some horror stories of people still enduring really bad experiences. Obviously, as well, by the way, people have good experiences, but lots of people having bad experiences as well. Well, the consultants and the GPs, reading on here, they called on the minister and senior officials to step in and have an external review of the emergency department carried out and an action plan put in place regarding access to the department and acute services. On to the Derry News this morning. Is this something that affects you? Derry and Strabane District Council received a total of 556 noise complaints last year, with the majority coming as a result of animal noise. Now, that's an awful lot, isn't it? That's well in excess of one a day, heading towards two a day. Animal noise accounted for 240 of the complaints. The second most common was music, televisions or parties, with 91 other neighbour noises. Other neighbour noise had 55 complaints, making it the third most common. There were 34 complaints about entertainment premises, putting it as the fourth most common. Construction sites, demolition work or road works was fifth with 18. On to the Nationals now, and the Irish Independent. Israel yesterday rebuffed growing international pressure for a ceasefire and said its forces had encircled Gaza City as the top US diplomat scrambled to contain a crisis that threatened to cause further escalation in neighbouring Lebanon. Gaza was under unprecedented bombardment from Israel yesterday, Palestinian news agency Wafa reported, while Palestinian telecommunications company Paltel said that all communication and internet services had once again been cut. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas joined international calls for an immediate ceasefire at a meeting with US Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, who was making an unannounced visit to the occupied West Bank. And I'm, you know, there's a lot of people really need to get off their backsides and work a little bit harder here. 4,000 children have been annihilated, obliterated, murdered over the last, since October 7th. 4,000 little children, along with 6,000 adults, 10,000 in total. That's what we know of. And yet still, the overnight bombardments, the all-day bombardments continue to wreak devastation and destruction on the majority of people who are just innocents. Shocking stuff. After Mr. Blinken repeated US concerns that a ceasefire could aid Hamas, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ruled out that unless hostages held by Hamas were released, there will be no ceasefire without the return of the hostages. This should be completely removed from the lexicon, he said there. On to the Irish Times and recruitment crises, you could call it, I think, in primary schools. Well, we have figures to show how bad it is. 800 vacant teachers' jobs in primary schools. An unprecedented shortfall of more than 800 vacant teacher posts across primary classes is undermining the education of pupils with the greatest needs, according to a survey of more than 1,000 schools. As a result, most schools say they're being forced to plug staffing gaps by redeploying special education teachers to cover for absent teachers in mainstream classes, leaving vulnerable pupils without support. Others are using unqualified staff or students to fill gaps. The survey of just over 1,014 primary and special schools, was it 1,015, was conducted in the first week of October by the Irish National Teachers Organisation in conjunction with the Irish Primary Principals Network and the Catholic Primary Schools Management Association. Now, I'd imagine that the problem is more acute in the likes of Dublin, but it's not. We aren't immune to it up here either, of course. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: the number of people hauled into court this year over unpaid TV licences has already surpassed the whole of 2022. There's been a massive increase in refusals to cough up for a licence since the RTE scandal over payments to Ryan Tubridy broke this year. Figures released to the Mail show that OnPost has applied for 11,941 summonses this year, of which 10,413 were brought before a judge. For the whole of 2022, OnPost applied for 14,915 summonses, but just 9,610 were heard. This means that 803 more people have appeared in court so far in 2023, with almost 2 months still to go. Are you still refusing to pay your TV licence? If so, why? Have you had a knock on the door? Are you prepared to go to court? There's an awful lot of people who are refusing, and I'm sure many of them are in our part of the world here. On to the Irish Sun this morning: Ukrainian refugees may face social welfare cuts and have to pay for their housing under new government plans. Officials aim to bring in measures before the end of this year in a bid to slow the numbers of those arriving from the war-torn country. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar explained to media during his visit to Seoul, South Korea, that details are yet to be agreed by cabinet. He said that almost a third of the 500 to 800 Ukrainians arriving each week previously had temporary accommodation in another EU country. So there's between 5 and up to 800 Ukrainians have safety and security in another country. But they go, they say, right, we're going to go over to Ireland now. He insisted that Ukrainians are still welcome here, but said measures are needed to cope with the large numbers. He told reporters any Ukrainian coming to Ireland is not going to be turned away. That's not going to happen. The situation that we have at the moment, though, is that the numbers have been very large. And as I say, particularly those who were safe in another country then coming on to Ireland. But we'll see. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Sorry, it's the Mirror. Micheál Martin wants to serve in another government after the general election. Speculation, although that being said, there is no other answer. If he was sitting in front of me now and I was to say to him, do you want to be in government after the next election? And he went, no. Where would it go from there? It would be very poor for Fianna Fáil. So invariably, he's going to say that, of course, he wants to be in government after the next general election, even if he has an eye on another job. Speculation over the Taoiseach's future has prompted suggestions that he might seek to become Ireland's EU commissioner next year, or could even contemplate running for the Irish presidency in 2025. Mr. Martin, whose party held its Ardesh in Dublin on Saturday, which, interestingly, the Israeli ambassador attended as well, it was held on Saturday. He insisted he's still committed to politics and enjoys being involved in decision-making within a government. He told RTE, I'm going to lead Fianna Fáil into the next general election. But as I say, obviously, that's what he's going to say. And finally, returning to the Middle East and Ukraine, both stories really combined here. The Israel war in Gaza is taking away the focus from the conflict in Ukraine and playing into the hands of Russian leader Vladimir Putin. President Vladimir Zelensky warned yesterday. He said the switch of attention from the conflict has also been the Russian president's aim, so he can act with impunity. Speaking after a briefing in Kyiv with visiting European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, Mr. Zelensky said, "It's clear that the war in the Middle East is taking away the focus from Ukraine." He added that Russia wanted this focus to be weakened, but stressed that everything is in our power. And he's also appealing to the US for more weapons, and the US are busy, obviously, in supporting Israel and also arming Taiwan up to the teeth as well. So they must be producing an awful lot of weapons in the United States at the moment. Okay, it's 9:15. It's the 9 till noon show. As I say, text WhatsApps 086 60 25,000. That is the WhatsApp or text. If you want to send a voice message on that number, please feel free to do so as well. If that's your preferred means of communication, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. And just a word to you, if you're listening on the podcast or you are listening overnight, a very good morning to you. Feel free to text in as well at that stage, and we can still carry the messages over to the next morning. So even if you're listening on delay, you can still be a part of the 9 till noon show. We woke this morning to terrible news that two 18-year-olds lost their lives in a single vehicle collision in North Inishowen. The crash happened near Glenealy shortly before midnight last night. A third person has been brought to hospital. The Glenealy to Coldaff Road is closed as Garda forensic teams prepare to carry out a full investigation and local diversions are in place. Councillor Martin McDermott is with us on the programme this morning. And Councillor McDermott, just shocking news, primarily for the families of those who have been killed and injured, but for the whole community, it's awful.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Yes, another sad morning here in Inishowen this morning, and particularly here in North Inishowen, with the news that two young people at 18 years of age, a fella and a girl, have been lost their lives last night. Devastating for the whole community, and particularly for the community in Glenealy, very close-knit community out there, and people work together in a very tight-knit community, and they're devastated this morning, but most of all for the two families. And I want to give my condolences to both families, and I'm sure on behalf of everyone, our condolences to both families. It's a devastating news this morning to wake up to.
Any parent, or I mean, you don't have to be a parent, but I think particularly as a parent, and especially, you know, when they're driving or more mobile than they are when they are young, it's just the worst nightmare. Just to imagine what those families are going through at the moment, and when they got that news, it's just absolutely devastating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's your worst nightmare to have to get someone to knock on your door and tell you that something has happened. And have girls around the same age myself, and you could not imagine that happening and someone coming to give you that news. But sadly, that's what has happened. And I think, you know, it's important now that the community, and I know the community in Glenealy, will rally around both families and do everything they can, and all the community here in North Inishowen will do everything they can over the next days, weeks and months ahead for both families, because it's going to be a very tough time for them particularly. But as I say, we will, and the people will do everything they can for them over the next period of time.
Yeah, and the young people's friends circle as well. Do you know what I mean? It's just so much devastation wreaked this morning.
Yeah, there's a big friend circle there with work and with school and with college and with everything else, and as I say, it's devastating, and it'll affect a lot of the children, a lot of the people in that area, and it'll affect school children and people out and about, and it's just, you can't put into words, Greg, you know, the feeling, the numbness that is felt in the community this morning, and you know, you just are heartfelt to those poor families that have to deal with us today.
Yeah, and it's been felt right across the northwest. Councillor Martin McDermott, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Greg.
Unfortunate circumstances to be speaking under, though. But just the Gardaí, of course, are appealing to anyone who may have witnessed this collision to contact them. Any road users who were travelling on the R238 in the early hours of this morning between midnight and 1 a.m. So it's the timeline's been updated somewhat till after midnight. especially if you've got camera footage. And it's not just of the incident itself, it's just anything from that road at that time. You're asked to make it available to Gardaí, and it's very simple. You don't have to download it or edit it or anything like that there. If you do happen to have dash cam footage, local Garda station, and they will do all of that for you. Anyone with any information is asked to contact Buncrana Garda Station on 074-932-0540. You can also contact the Garda confidential line on 1-800-666-111 or any Garda station for that matter. And any information would be very important. That single vehicle collision officially now updated. Sorry, I read an older script. It was involving one vehicle, and it occurred at around 12:30 a.m. in the early hours of this morning. And as I say, our deepest condolences to everyone affected by that awful, awful, awful tragedy. Right, okay. Michael joins us on the programme now. Michael, good morning to you. Thanks for taking the time to call, talk to us.
Good morning, Craig.
You served with the UN in Lebanon, in the Middle East.
I did, yes.
Yeah. And you think we can put the what's happening into Gaza into a bit of perspective?
Yes, we certainly can. You know, the time that I was there, you know, I have experienced, you know, the Arabs, and I've experienced the Israelis, and I've experienced the Arab Christians, and I've experienced the PLO and their attitude towards, you know, different factions and different peoples. And I firmly believe, even then, going back, you know, 40 years ago, that the radical Muslims wanted Israel just eradicated off the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, that's the way it is today, you know, that Hamas do not want any Jews living in Israel at all. They just want them gone. I'm not sure, I don't think so, that, you know, in Israel itself now at the minute, there's 1.5 million Arab Jews living in Israel who settled in Israel, but Hamas, as far as I'm concerned, they're a terrorist organization, they're a genocide organization, and they just want to eradicate the Jews. They're not going to settle for a two-state solution. Well, they just want them gone.
Israel, obviously, because we can see with their actions and the indiscriminate nature of their bombing, they clearly want to eradicate Palestine as well. 4,000 children have lost their lives, a further 6,000
Greg, this is the narrative that's been pushed by the media, and it's the narrative that's been pushed all around the world, except for some people, right-thinking people, that can see through that narrative.
So you're saying it's not happening, Michael?
It's happening, yeah. All right, but it's in retaliation to Hamas going in to Israel,
yeah,
raping, burning, beheading children. 1,600, that's a retaliation to that. You know, the Hamas are holding their own people as human shields and in bondage, and they have been holding them in bondage for the last 10 to 15 years since they got rid of the the Palestine Liberation Organization. They've been at this for a long, long, long time, and they do not want peace.
Do you think the Israeli response has been proportionate?
Well, How do you gauge proportion in
That's
a war?
I'm asking. Well, yes, but there are rules to war, as you would know.
Well, if the rules to war, right, when the Germans, we'll give an example if you want examples. I'll give you an example. When the Germans and the Nazis bombed Britain during the war, there was 150,000 English people lost their lives in the Blitz. Mm-hmm. When Britain bombed Germany, there was over 2 million. Innocent people. That's what war's about. Yeah, you know, and I think they've been very.
Michael, do you not think when we when we bring it down to this level of conversation, and when we sort of try and put it into some sort of a historical context, which you have, that doesn't take away from the fact that 4,000 children have been blown to bits. They're incapable of supporting Hamas. They're incapable of being responsible in any way, shape or form. What the Germans did, what the British did almost 100 years ago, that is almost us avoiding the actual reality that 4,000 children have died in the last month. I mean, what do you say about that? Because that's what's not being talked about. in the media.
Yeah. Well, it has been talked about in the media because it's there all the time, so we're aware of it, and nobody wants to see anybody dying in war.
RT have a reporter in Israel interviewing people rollerblading around the city. Do you know what I mean? That's the coverage that we're getting here. If you want to sort of see,
would you really believe anything that comes from RTE?
No, I'm not criticizing RTE, but I mean, like, there are other news outlets, Al Jazeera, for an example. They have reporters inside Gaza where you get more of a sense of what's actually happening. But regardless, surely, Michael, what we need to be talking about is a cessation to this. Because at the moment, Israel is effectively driving the entire population of Palestine to the south, and they probably would love them out of that area altogether. We had the awful events of October 7th, but rather than sort of justifying it or saying it's proportionate or disproportionate, would you not like to see the world leaders actually go in and say, right, enough is enough. We can't, at this point, continue to blow innocent people to bits.
Israel was not the aggressor here. Let's get that point across. Israel was not the aggressor here. Mm-hmm. And Israel hasn't been the aggressor. Any time there's been conflict in the Middle East, it's been the Arab states and the Arabs and the Arab Palestinians that have attacked Israel. Mm-hmm. All of the wars, right through, you know, from 1948, 1967, 1973, it's the major wars, and there've been skirmishes, you know, in between. Hamas and the PLO and different organizations have attacked Israel. Mm-hmm. Israel has not attacked another country once.
But so say, for instance, you talked about the historical context. Like, when do you start history? What about the formation of Israel? What about since then? What about, like, the Hamas, as far as I'm aware, don't have a massive presence in the West Bank, yet there are many people that have died at the hands of the Israelis there. You know what I mean? It's didn't start on October 7th.
It didn't start on October 7th at all. It started probably in 1880 or 1885 or 1890. It started way back then. You know, and it was the UN, and before that it was the League of Nations decided that Israel should have a homeland. Mm-hmm. when the Jews were being exterminated in Europe. Mm-hmm. And in Germany. Like, what do you want the Jews to do? What do you really, what does people want the Jewish nation to do? Walk away from Israel? Is that what they want them to do? Or do you want them to sit in Israel and let Arab countries bomb them day in and day out and do nothing? What does the people want them to do?
So you actually see almost exclusively here the Israelis as the victims.
I'm not saying there's victims. There's all victims in conflict. We've heard that numerous times in Ireland. There's always innocent victims in conflict. Nobody wants to see conflict. Nobody wants to see wars. I don't want to see any wars. You know, and if people have experienced people dying in wars or people dying through, you know, military conflict, you don't want to see that happening. You don't want to see children dying. You don't want to see elderly people. You don't want to see anybody dying. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is they have to be a balance here, you know.
But do you not think in the media coverage, Michael, I'm not sure which media you consume, do you not find that the media coverage is really quite pro-Israel? Because that's the impression I get. Now, I'm not saying it should be anti-Israel, but for example, they just announced a certain amount of people that have been killed in overnight bombing. There's no differentiating them between innocent civilians and members of Hamas. You know, it's just a figure that's thrown out, and it's the IDF and all of their information that's provided to the media that is printed or reported pretty much unchallenged. So I would argue, Michael, or not argue, but debate, you know what I mean, that the coverage that we are getting is actually really quite pro-Israel, rather than balanced. So where am I wrong?
No, I think you're wrong. And I think you're wrong in the sense that whenever they were covering, you know, the initial October the 7th attack on Israel, the genocide on Israel, that's a genocide what they done. You know, mm-hmm. what Hamas done, they went in and they mutilated people in Israel. And that's exactly what they done. And we had people in Donegal, out celebrating that, waving Palestinian flags and Hamas flags. That's crazy.
One second, did you? So you're telling me now, hand on heart, you saw people waving Hamas flags in Donegal? Hamas flags?
Of course. I'll tell you what. All you had to do was go to the meetings that were, or the marches that was in Letterkenny, the marches that were all around.
I only saw Palestinian different flags, to be honest with you. I didn't see any Hamas flags, but if you say you saw them...
Well, they're under the gaze of Palestinian flags.
Yes, it was
but it wasn't Hamas flags.
Yeah, but it wasn't Hamas flags you saw. It was Palestinian flags. I mean, we're talking about the media here. We have to get things right and accurate. But you speak so passionately, Michael, and I understand it, and I'm not calling you out, and you speak so passionately about the atrocity, the awful, awful events of October 7th. But when I mention what's happened subsequently, you know what I mean? You don't seem as emotionally invested in 10,000 innocents being carpet bombed in Gaza. Is that not part of the problem, that people are taking sides in something where we should all take a stand back and say it's all horrendous and it all needs to stop and there has to be a solution to this? Because, to be honest with you, we could argue that either side wants to wipe the other side out, and that Israel would love its country to border the sea on its... you know what I mean? It's not. Maybe
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, you said that I wouldn't be passionate about, the 10,000 people. I would be every bit as passionate about 10,000, Palestinians dying as 10,000 Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, conflict's an awful thing.
It is.
You know what I mean? And I don't think you should level that at me.
No, well, I wouldn't do it unless...
I'm trying to be balanced.
Of course, Michael, I'll beg a question here
now to you,
yeah.
Greg Wright. If the Israelis left their arms down tomorrow, what would happen?
Yeah, there probably would be further attacks like which we saw on October 7th.
Yes. If the Palestinian people lay their arms down, would the same happen?
Well, Michael, you would know that there are people...
I've asked you a question. What do you think, Craig?
Well, I don't feel I'm qualified to speak on it, to be honest with you, but I do know that up until now, up until the events of October 7th, which could never be justified, that the Palestinians would say that they were being killed left and right and centre by the Israelis. It just wasn't being reported.
The Israelis have never said that they want to eradicate the Muslim people or the Arab people. They've never, ever, ever said that.
Neither have.
But Hamas has.
Hamas has, yes.
Yes, they have.
But, they don't necessarily speak for the Palestinian people en bloc.
That's exactly, we understand that, because they're holding the Palestinian people in bondage. And the sooner the people realise that and waken up to that the Palestinian people in Gaza and in the, are being held, in bondage...
Like, in terms of being held in bondage, and again, I'd be hesitant to talk about things I don't have experience of or understand, but has the people of Palestine not effectively been, and it's been generally accepted to be, bonded by Israel in an open-air prison, effectively, where their water is regulated, their fuel is regulated, their imports are regulated, their ability to produce or export is regulated? So have the Palestinians not been living in that enclave, effectively in bondage at the hands of Israel and the West for many, many generations?
If you go back to the start of the conflict, and you have to go back, then everybody goes back and back and back and back. The Palestinians that are living now in Gaza are there because of the previous conflicts. When a two-state solution was offered to the Palestinian people, they didn't want it. They do not want a two-state solution. And that's the bottom line, isn't it? They do not want a two-state solution.
Mm-hmm.
Israel has offered that on numerous occasions, a two-state solution, and they don't want it. And this is where the problem lies. They do not want a two-state solution. They want Israel out of Israel. They want the Israeli people gone. And this is where the problem lies.
It's not all
the Palestinian people or all the Arab nations around them,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of Arab nations around and support Israel and wanted a two-state solution. But Iran doesn't want it. Probably Syria doesn't want it. And, there's a few other radical...
What do you see as the solution, Michael?
There's only one way it can be. It's a two-state solution. There's no other solution, and that's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other solution, and there can't be any other solution other than a two-state solution. You can historically you can say Israel belongs to the Jews, and you can say that historically the land that they call Palestine now, or some people call Palestine, but it's Israel, belongs to the Arabs, mm-hmm. which it was Arabs.
You had seen historically how Israel has been encroaching in that territory over the last number of decades.
Well, they've had to encroach into it because they were getting bombed from the West Bank. They were getting bombed from the Golan Heights. They're now getting bombed from South Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 67 war, they were encroached by Egypt, Jordan, Syria. And, you know, that was a 7-day war. You know, they had to defend themselves. What did you want? What does people want them to do? Just sit back and let all these Arab nations come in and wipe them out? They have to defend themselves. And, like, they have a right to be there as well, as the same right as the Palestinians have to be there.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, they can't live in peace because it's Islamic jihad has taken place out there.
All right, Michael, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. That's Michael and his views there. Congratulations to that caller, Michael, who's standing up for Israel and telling the truth about what's going on. I'm shocked that the biased Highland Radio let him on air. All right, we hear all views on this program, but anyway, that's your view, and I've read it out. Who was on the land before Israel set up, says a caller. Palestine was the biggest country in the Middle East during World War II. Israel is pushing the people of Palestine out of their native country in the West Bank and make Israel just a Jewish country. Greg, you are calling for Israel to declare a ceasefire, yet Hamas does not want a ceasefire. Well, it depends on what reports you hear in relation to that, but I don't, again, know enough to get into that, but I have heard reports that Hamas wants a ceasefire, but either side... Israel wants Hamas gone at this point. That's what they're stating. Tell Michael this is not a war. It's the slaughter of the innocent children. Another, can you please ask the current caller to open a history book? Absolutely appalling listening to that opinion when a dog on the street can see what is happening there. Michael does not know his history. Israel was the aggressor when they stole Palestine land and houses. Israel is bombing Jordan and Syria every day, says another. What does Michael want the Palestinians to do? Stay in concentration camps? Many of these points are put to Michael as well, who's of a view that some people would agree with. Ask that man how Israel was set up. Another, get that man off the air who is holding the Palestinian people without food, water, etc. How can he condone children being killed? He may be a soldier, but that does not give him any credit. Another, the two-state solution was offered. It was never offered, sorry. Israel was founded on Palestinian land. They threw Palestinians out of their homes and moved in. So we put an inquiry in with the HSE that reads as follows. I'm wondering if you have any additional information on the fact that the Letterkenny Hospital crisis is now impacting elderly patients waiting to go into respite at St. Joseph's Community Hospital in Stranorlar. These elderly people who are used to St. Joseph's now are being sent to private nursing homes when it is their week for respite. This is ridiculous and unfair. Just because the management at Letterkenny Hospital cannot get their act together does not mean that poor elderly people should be farmed out to places that they are not used to going. Now, this is the views of a listener that we sent to the HSE. Many of them have built relationships with the staff at St. Joseph's and know what to expect. Consistency is important for most of them. St. Joseph's is now accepting over 65-year-olds from the overflow at Letterkenny Hospital. This is not even safe for the current residents of St. Joseph's Hospital. This is exactly what happened in New York during COVID when ill patients were brought into nursing homes. So many died because of it. There are other contagious illnesses apart from COVID. The HSE in response, all efforts are being made by the Older Person Service to support older people availing of respite in Donegal. At the same time, the service must also offer post-acute hospital care to those older people who need a continued level of support. In order to facilitate the demand for both respite and post-acute care, some respite services are now provided in private nursing homes within the area, all of which are registered facilities with HICWA and have the ability to provide the required care level. This will be kept under review on an ongoing basis. Irene Byrne joins us now. Irene, I mean, we've outlined the scenario and we've outlined the HSE's response.
Yeah, I mean, our main concern as a family is why are they disrupting a system that is effective and in place at St. Joseph's? to make way for patients to come in from the overflow at Letterkenny, when those patients can go directly to the spots that are available in the other private nursing homes. So, for example, my dad, instead of going back into St. Joseph's in a couple of weeks, has been given, and it's only 10 minutes up the road, has been given an assignment at a private nursing home up above the hospital in Letterkenny.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why it is that they have to disrupt something that works well at St. Joseph's and is a good system. And there are so many people that come in for their cycle of care. They know the staff know them, they know the system. And now they're being turned away from St. Joseph's, sent somewhere they've never been before. And the patients from St. Joseph's are from Letterkenny Hospital are going into St. Joseph's.
Has it been explained to you as
they
to
can't
why?
Go directly?
Yeah, has it been explained to you why people aren't moved from Letterkenny University Hospital to the closer Larissa Lodge and allow their regular respite at St. Joseph's to continue? Because obviously Larissa Lodge is closer to LUH than St. Joseph's is.
Absolutely, and that's our question. And we don't know who made that decision and why the decision was made.
Mm-hmm. So to help us understand more, can you tell us what your dad's situation is and how the respite care works? If that's okay, I
agree. Absolutely. My dad is a lovely, wonderful 91-year-old man, and he's lived a great life.
Mm-hmm.
And just over the past few years, he's needed additional help with mobility and getting around. And so we do qualify for the Fair Deal Scheme, and we went through all of that paperwork. We have HSE support, minimal support in the morning, a little bit of lunch, and again at the end of the day.
And this is at home, is it? Yes.
And this is at home, okay. Absolutely. And then we have additional support that we put in place as a family, pardon me, for him. So that week of respite is really an opportunity for my mother, who is 87,
mm-hmm.
and is a darling, and is his main caregiver. It's a little week for her to have a little bit
batteries.
Of a break.
To charge her batteries up, Irene.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And we as a family, you know, I live in the States, my sister lives in the States, my brother lives in London.
Mm-hmm.
We rotate through about every 8 or 9 weeks. One of us is always there as support.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish we could do it more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the fact that we had this week set up. And when I called St. Joseph's, they said, oh, no, all respite is cancelled because of the crisis in Letterkenny. Why are we allowing the crisis in Letterkenny to impact St. Joseph's?
Mm-hmm.
That should not be happening. They're separate places. They should keep the well-established program working and let Letterkenny Hospital do what they need to do with those, you know, fit-to-be-discharged patients mm-hmm. that
now,
need to go
I
in
know it's
to a skilled nursing facility.
I know it might seem obvious, Irene, but if your father gets, and he'll get very good care in Larissa Lodge, I think we can both agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of course. But why is that not a preferred option for you? Like, what impact might you have? Is it in terms of visiting him? Is it in terms of familiar surroundings? Why is that option?
I mean, because it's a new place yet again for mm-hmm. someone to have to get used to. You know, when you've gone in somewhere and you get to know the staff and they get to know you and you know the routine, it's very comforting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one probably really wants to be in respite. Some do, but most don't.
Yes.
And just be able to go into a comfortable place where you're well taken care of. And I know that Larissa Lodge has a very good reputation.
Yes.
It's not about that. It's just, why put somebody in, sort of farm people out to an unfamiliar place when you can keep the system that's working?
Farming people, it's a bit unfortunate too, because those are other people's, that's an unfortunate phrase, those are other people's families as well. Do you know what I mean? And hopefully that's their pathway. That's their pathway to getting home. They're not animals. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think that better care should be taken of every single elderly person in Donegal, in fact, around the entire country. But just sort of arbitrarily deciding that we're going to stop this respite and we're going to take these people and put them in there, it just doesn't make any sense.
All right, another listener.
One system.
Yeah, another listener says, my dad lives in Lifford and goes to St. Joseph's in Stranola for respite. We recently got letters to say his respite is in Letterkenny. We have no car. If he needs anything, we'll have to pay a taxi. It's just not possible for us. Even convoy would have been closer to us. Not everything is centred around Letterkenny. No thought has been given to families who have to travel. Even we get a bus, we would still need a return taxi to and from the mountaintop. It's so unfair. Why are families being punished like this? Another, my mum goes to St. Joseph's for respite once every 8 weeks. This week, we got notified that she'll now have to go to Letterkenny. There was a ward in St. Joseph's, fully refurbished, and now it's become a changing room. It's ridiculous. Why this room can't be used for respite is beyond me. There is plenty of room and staff, so what is the excuse? There are loads of families in this situation who took a lot of time to get our mum settled into St. Joseph's. Now we have to do it all over again in another strange place. Change is not easy for some elderly people, especially older people with dementia. I've spoken to other family members in the same boat who have no form of transport to get to Letterkenny. Another, why can these patients in Letterkenny who need a long-term bed not be sent to the nursing home in Letterkenny instead of forcing us in the Lifford area to travel to Letterkenny? So, you know, that's four or five families there. In the same situation, Irene, as your family. And I suppose to there can be some contentment, I suppose, there has to be during respite because, you know, everyone has to look after themselves and get their batteries charged as best as possible. But when it's in a new place and there's other anxieties thrown in, maybe to some extent the whole purpose of the respite is lost because someone spends that week feeling anxious and, I don't know, guilty or whatever emotions people might have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just so unfair. And, you know, I've been in St. Joseph's and I've seen this, you know, you sort of have a little cohort of people that come in at the same time. And you know, it's so nice because everybody knows them and everyone knows to make them a cup of tea and they know everybody. And there's just the familiarity and knowing the routine and where you're going to be next and what you're doing. I mean, that's a big part of it. It's really hard to go somewhere that you're not used to. And it's just, it's so unfair. It's just so unfair and unnecessary.
Yeah, I suppose... Though, have they set St. Joseph's up, though, as a place now specifically for, you know, post-hospital care that maybe can't be provided in a number of different premises? Do you know what I mean? If we are going to try and address this crisis and get people out of hospital, there does have to be a, dare I say, you know, like almost like a centre of excellence. And that's not to any, that's not speaking down any other nursing home. I'm just trying to think of the logic here, Irene.
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely what the HSE said last week and what they said was that everyone that has been sent to these nursing homes is a fit to be discharged patient who no longer needs care at Letterkenny Hospital.
They need support,
So I think that, you know, and all of that, somewhere like Larissa Lodge is a skilled nursing facility as well. Mm. So, you know, again,
that being said,
don't
see,
disrupt one thing.
The complication is though, Irene, you know, St. Joseph's can't take everyone. So let's say hypothetically, God forbid, your father needed hospital treatment and needed to be discharged to a community hospital. Would you be on saying, well, why is he not being discharged to St. Joseph's? Why is he being discharged from hospital to Larissa Lodge? Do you know what I mean? Is there not a there comes a point where there is just not enough capacity to do everything to suit everybody? And I mean that with no badness in my heart, Irene. I hope you understand. It's just to tease the convo out.
Yeah, it is, to be quite honest, is that they don't need to disrupt one system just because the system at Letterkenny Hospital doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what they're doing.
Okay.
And my fear is that there are so many families that will not be able to get to where the new place that they're assigned and they won't get their week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awful. And, you know, one of the things that I noticed at St. Joseph's as well was that there are a couple of people that come in and they come in and, you know, they might be elderly people living at home. I don't know their story.
Yes.
But they come in and they're taken care of for a week and they get their meals and they get their cup of tea and they get someone to talk to. And, you know, talk about respite. I mean, that's a whole new breath of life for them, you know. And some of them may not be able to get to anywhere else.
Yes. Okay.
So we've totally disrupted that system. Mm. And I just think that needs to be looked at.
Okay.
Why do we have to let Letterkenny Hospital impact St. Joseph's? We shouldn't allow it.
Understood, Irene. And I hope you know you've been heard. I appreciate your time and best wishes to
Thank
your
you.
Dad and the rest of the family, okay?
Thank you very
Take
much, Greg. I do appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, Irene.